Are you a good witch or a
bad bitch? Bad bitch, bad bitch. I've been a rebel all my life.
We will not remain hidden figures. We have names.
Oh, if it's naughty to ruse your lips, shake your shoulders, shake your hips, and let a lady confess I want to be best.
I didn't kid you, did I? Well, now you know.
Let's talk about why we're here.
Yes, please.
Why are we here, Deanna?
Hannah, we are here to talk about badass women on both sides of the good and evil spectrum in a podcast called
Good Witches,
Bad Bitches.
Yeah.
And people can be both at the same time.
Absolutely.
Or be more of one or the other.
Exactly. Or they could be what I like to call a psychic vampire, which is the serial killers of the world. And we'll talk about them, too.
Psychic vampires, of course.
I'm just saying, they exist, they're real, and we're going to talk about them. Every week, we are going to be talking about a good witch or a bad bitch from history or from contemporary times, whichever we choose to do.
Exactly.
We're going to switch off and hopefully...
Because we don't want to bog you down too much time-wise.
Yeah, we want to keep this short enough that you can listen to it on your commute. Oh, that cat. That cat is gonna...
It's okay. He's great.
All right.
No. He's fine. It's adding color.
An orange color, specifically.
Orange and white.
Orange and white.
Yes. So we're here to tell you about awesome women. Awesome in both senses of the word of our modern days. They're awesome and also like they inspire awe in good and bad ways.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about awesome women, and you should be fucking excited, because we are.
Well, why are we here? We're here because this fucking administration sucks, but also because ladies are awesome, and I feel like in the last, you know, year and a half, we've had a lot of examples of amazing women doing amazing things, and I think it's just kind of like time that we talk about it.
Right? I'm ready.
You know?
My sweatshirt's ready.
Your sweatshirt's ready. What does your sweatshirt say?
The future is female.
The future is fucking female.
Then I had a Rosie the Riveter bag today.
And you
had
a Rosie.
I was lady ready for us to podcast
fucking
today.
Right. Mm. Also, I've just said fuck like 3 times in the last minute, so I think if you can't tell already, this is
rife with inappropriateness.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Not necessarily safe for work.
We're also not the most research heavy. Like, we do a research. I'm a Ravenclaw. Hannah's a Slytherin.
Yeah.
But
I'm ambitious, but to a point.
Right. But, you know, we're not historians by any stretch of the imagination. We just want to talk about awesome women who get us excited, who make us want to passionately talk about how amazing they are. Or how scary they are.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. I think that sums
it
up.
And learn something new.
Yes. Learn something new.
I didn't know about the woman that I researched. You didn't know about the woman you researched. Sometimes we might have heard of them, but
yeah.
We're here to learn some new fucking facts.
There are some women in this world that are fucking incredible that you have never, ever heard about.
And you should have.
And you should have. But instead,
we should have. We're not going to shame you for it because we didn't either.
Right. We heard about the male counterpart instead in so many cases. And they're like, I already have a list 20 people long, you know, and growing every fucking minute of people that I want to talk about who have done things better than the men who got credit for doing the same thing.
Yes.
So I'm really excited to talk about just
so many ladies.
A plethora of ridiculously awesome people.
Smorgasbord
of ladies. Much like binders full of women, but, you know, because ladies.
Less sexist. Cat, that was my foot. I think we did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I think we did a good job.
I mean, I think we went above and beyond.
So, welcome to our inaugural episode of Good Witches, Bad Bitches. I'm Hannah. I'm a writer and literary agent here in New York.
I'm Deanna. I am in casting for film and TV, and I'm also an actor here in New York.
What?
So Hannah's going to start us off this week for our inaugural episode. We decided to base it off of historical timelines. We can do whatever we want for how we choose who goes in what order.
Yeah.
But Hannah's woman was born first, so we chose for Hannah to go first. Me, Deanna, I'm going to go second next week.
Mm-hmm. Equally awesome.
Yes.
Amazing woman.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. But before we dive into that, we want to decompress, I think, just a tiny bit about some current issues.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about, because we were supposed to shoot, or we were supposed to record our first episode last week, and I had just come back from a conference in Denver, and I was really feeling, I was in a weird place emotionally and didn't quite feel like I was up to recording our very first like big inaugural episode last week. And part of that is because I had just come back from a publishing event where while I was there, all of these men in kid literature, authors and agents and editors had been named as harassers and assaulters.
Kidlit,
specifically. Gross. And it was really, like, it jarred me, not only because I work in Kidlit, in addition to, like, adult publishing, I also work in the Kidlit side. It was jarring because I was surrounded by people who I work with every day, who work with these people, with these men, who, like, you know, they do books with them, they write books with them, they sell their books, etc. It was really strange, but it was also the first time in publishing, really, that we have started hearing names come out.
Oh.
So since, like, since the Harvey Weinstein stuff started several months ago, publishing has sort of been, like, ready for its own reckoning,
for sure.
And there was an article that came out a couple of weeks ago by Anna Ursu, URSU, for anyone who wants to go read it, in Medium. And it was about, she had interviewed, like, 90 to 100 women who wanted to remain anonymous for the purposes of her article, about their experiences being harassed or assaulted by men in publishing, specifically Kidlit publishing. And she had, yes, and she had tons of stories. She had all of these women who had been to conferences and been harassed or abused by men there, and then those men were invited back the next year, even though those women had told the conferences.
Holy shit.
About the behavior. Like, all this shit was going on. And in the aftermath of that, all of this stuff started coming out on Twitter from women, mainly writers, who were not, you know, quote unquote, in the know. And they were really scared. And they were really, like,
kind of shocked.
Shocked. And they were freaked out. They didn't want to be people who went to conferences and interacted with these men.
Is this the business that I want to get into?
Yes. Yep. And it started this big conversation, because the women who came out and decided to remain anonymous, obviously, and should not have felt like they were, you know, that they owed anyone else their truth. You know, they don't owe anyone else the name. They don't owe anyone else that story. So the people who felt scared, who were saying, well, I don't know what's going on. I don't know who these men are. Like, I want to know who these people are so I can avoid them, were really freaked out. And so after that, on this random article that was posted, like, back in January on the School Library Journal, women started naming names.
Oh, shit.
In the comments. Like, a month after this article came out, women started naming names. And it was just, like, it was so powerful, but also terrifying, because, like, as somebody who works in publishing, as a publishing professional, like, those are people that I could have worked with at some point, that, you know, I may have worked with at some point.
Sure.
And so we started talking about and having this conversation about how we protect writers from either our clients or protect our clients from other writers. Mm. And yeah, and it was this really like heavy, serious time and discussion in publishing that just kind of, I mean, it's obviously, it's still happening and it's going to keep happening. And I don't know what the effects of it are, but it was really heavy.
I mean, do you think these men are going to be invited back to conferences and stuff? You think it's going to affect their,
No, I think, and what's crazy is like bookstores have, like, depending on where you are, if you're an indie store or Barnes & Noble or whatever, like every bookstore has had a different response to the accusations. So some people have taken books off the shelf entirely. Mm. Some people have put like, let's have a conversation tags on those books.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, wow. Because I mean, if the person named was in publishing exclusively and wasn't an author, that is now tied irrevocably to that author's name.
Yeah.
That's so unfortunate.
Yeah.
If the author is, you know, not obviously not necessarily culpable in any of that, but somehow is now tied to
Yeah, so it's like a big, it's a big deal. And I guess the reason that I wanted to talk about it is just because I find the women who came forward with their stories really amazing and really powerful. And
it's scary.
It's terrifying. And
to come up against big publishing conglomerates.
Yeah. You know. Yes. It's so, so scary. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, it's not Hollywood, but it is a different animal. And it's, you know, I think people need to know that, women need to know that they're supported and, you know, that we're talking about.
I mean, I'm glad that it's happening. It's like trickling into other industries, other media.
Yeah.
Because if it just is exclusively in one area, then it's fruitless, it's pointless.
Yes, exactly.
So that's really awesome.
Yeah. But it's a little terrifying.
But, and it's also really upsetting.
Yeah.
When all these things come to light. And I mean, you know they're there, but when it's even higher than you anticipated, and it's like, oh, God, I'm so not surprised, but it's also still so upsetting.
It's, yeah, it's all these names that, like, and I'll show you after, because you're going to be
floored.
Shocked. Yeah, you're going to be shocked. If you want to find it, it's the School Library Journal has the article with all of these comments. I can probably post it in the show notes, as I've been reminded by somebody who knows what they're doing. So, yeah. So thanks for letting me, you know.
Well, I'm glad that you're feeling more open to talk about it now.
Yeah. Well, because it's like, now we're seeing results from it. It's not just this big, like, scary, terrifying thing that happened while I was in the middle of a publishing conference. Like, it's now, we're seeing the effects of it, and we're seeing people coming out in support of these women. And so, yeah, I thought it was an important thing to talk about.
Yeah.
Especially right before I talk about somebody who was really badass and didn't mind speaking her mind.
Speaking her truth.
Speaking her truth at all.
And living in it.
And living in it.
Advertising it.
Hell yeah.
Advertising your truth.
Yeah. So, on that note, let's just jump in.
Let's talk about an awesome lady.
All right. I've got a little story you ought to know. We're drinking, my friend, to the end of a brief episode. Just make it one. I would love to tell you a story about a woman from Harlem named Stephanie St. Clair. Does it sound familiar to you?
No idea who she is.
So before I go into this, I want to say thank you to Wikipedia, rejectedprincesses.com, blackpast.org, and history.com for all of the amazing information. And I want to talk a little bit about the Harlem Renaissance, because that is when Madame St. Clair, a.k.a. Madame Queenie, a.k.a. Stephanie St. Clair, was live and kicking in Harlem. So In the 1880s, Harlem was originally built as a white neighborhood.
Yes. I know this much.
Do you? Because I didn't actually know that. But it was overdeveloped so much to the point where they had all of these huge, beautiful, empty buildings that needed to be rented, and they didn't have enough people to rent them.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So landlords who were losing money on all of these empty buildings went, okay, well, why don't we go ahead and start renting to African-American families?
Which will immediately drive out the white people.
And that's what caused the white flight in Harlem.
Yep.
So pretty much from the minute white people left Harlem, they started having a Harlem Renaissance. And that meant that there was this amazing art and literature being produced. You had W.E.B. Du Bois, Langston Hughes, yep. Zora Neale Hurston,
yep.
Which is just a few names out of a lot of people, a lot of artists and writers who were there at the time. Jazz was hugely popular. A lot of the most amazing artists of the time played in Harlem.
Jazz really started to become a mainstream thing and develop.
And white people really loved jazz, but they didn't want to have to be around black people while they were listening to jazz. So they created nightclubs in Harlem that were for white people so they could listen to...
That plays into mine, actually.
Oh, God, that's fucking terrible. But basically, like, shit was awesome. And poetry and literature and art were exploding. So that was the Harlem that Stephanie St. Clair arrived in. She was born in a French... French region of the Caribbean. It's a little disputed where she's from. Some places say Martinique and some say Guadeloupe. But basically, she spoke French, she spoke Spanish, and she spoke English. And she got to Harlem in 1912, where she pretty much immediately became enmeshed in the gangster underworld.
Hell yeah.
So she was known for having a very fierce temper, and she could just spout out profanity in all three languages if you got on her bad side. Her sense of fashion was well known throughout Harlem, where she was referred to as Madame St. Clair, while in the rest of Manhattan and the other boroughs, she was referred to as Queenie.
So, like, was she just... a personality at this time? Like, people just knew who she was?
Yes, and they knew who she was because she became heavily involved right away, because she brought all this money with her from the Caribbean.
Did she come from money?
I don't actually know. That's a good question that I did
not. Much like where she actually comes from, it's shrouded in a little bit of
mystery. It's shrouded in mystery.
Got it. With you.
So she has this money. She starts her own... a racket game, numbers racket, which I did not know what that was, so I decided to do some Wikipedia-ing and put in a little about...
I was going to ask you, I was going to say, what is that? Like, what? I don't know.
It's really interesting. It's not racketeering.
I shouldn't posit anything because I don't even know what racketeering is, and that's what makes me sound
I guess
stupid.
I shouldn't say it's not racketeering because I don't know what racketeering is either. So I'm going to look up that next.
Oh, yeah, that's next up.
But so the numbers game, also known as the numbers racket, the policy racket, the Italian lottery, the policy game, or the daily number, is
either
a form. Either way, it's gambling. It's a form of illegal gambling or illegal lottery played mostly in poor and working class neighborhoods in the United States, wherein a bettor attempts to pick three digits to match those that will be randomly drawn the following day. A gambler places a bet with a bookie at a tavern, a bar, a barbershop, a social club, wherever. A runner carries the money and betting slips between the betting parlors and headquarters, called a numbers bank or policy bank. And, people who come from poor backgrounds can make money playing the numbers game.
Like, how much money could you win?
I don't know how much money you could really win, but you...
And what that means, but, based off today's inflation and stuff.
But it was something that poor people did do in order to, like, pay their rent. They did it to, you know, send their kids to school. Like, it wasn't a ton of money, but it was enough money.
Cool. Because school costs money.
Everything costs money, you know, and Harlem was booming, like the Renaissance was doing amazing things, but it wasn't wealthy.
No.
You know? It wasn't, like, totally rich.
The arts bring rich people, but the artists are never the rich ones.
No.
So she was running lottery.
So she was running this lottery. But at the same time, she was extremely community-oriented. She was known for pulling full-page ads in the newspaper, most of which were spent educating her neighbors about their rights, advocating for voting rights, calling out police brutality. Yeah, she was awesome. She spent her money on any number of community projects. She made sure all of her employees were dressed impeccably and treated other Harlemites with the utmost courtesy. And she even lived in the same building as many other neighborhood luminaries like W.E.B. Du Bois, Thurgood Marshall, C.J. Walker, and more. So
they lived in the same building?
Yeah, she lived in the same building. Yeah.
All right.
She so could just, like, go downstairs, knock on their door, and borrow a cup of sugar.
Those were all men, too, that you just listed. So, of course, they're the names that stick out in history.
Got it.
Because she was their contemporary, and she was famous in her time.
Yeah.
And, okay. Yeah. That's the whole point that we're doing this. Hell yeah.
I know. Well, and hers was the only female name mentioned in that Wikipedia article that I found about the policy game. Like, because they talk about, you know, how the Italian mafia basically created it in New York and ran it in New York, but she was the one running it in Harlem.
Oh.
And kind of defying them at every turn.
Yeah.
So besides being like a community advocate, that was the other thing she was famous for, was getting into basically a gang war with the Italian mafia.
Oh my God.
In New York. Yeah.
What?
Yes. She was amazing. Let's see, I've written here, when the economy tanked thanks to the Great Depression and white mobsters' profits began to plunge in New York and the rest of Manhattan and the other boroughs, that was when they started to edge in on Harlem. So Dutch Schultz, being the most ruthless and persistent, he started making phone calls threatening her, kidnapping and straight up murdering her men and buying off police in the neighborhood.
Oh, Jesus.
Because he was desperate for...
Because I'm sure the cops were all... Irish, probably, at the time.
You're asking me all these questions I didn't think to look up answers to.
I know, and it's going to happen to me, too. I'm just saying, I'm just, like, trying to pause. Based off, this is so stupid. I'm basing this off of Ragtime, the musical, which was, you know.
I was thinking about Ragtime earlier.
I was like, most of the cops, they're Irish, right? And I'm like, this is based off of a musical. That's not.
Hopefully someone will correct us at some point if it's false. And if they don't, then we can just assume you're right.
I'm sure there were lots of Irish cops. They were probably not all Irish. I would assume, though, that the majority of the police force at this time was probably white, though. You think we could safely assume that?
I think that's safe to assume. I think. I am not a historian.
Oh, yeah. We'd like to... that's the we're not historians.
Yeah. We'll not historians. Nope. That's a disclaimer we'll make often throughout this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So, at one point, Schultz sent a mafia underling to intimidate her, and she pushed said underling into a closet, locked him in, and called in her four massive bodyguards to, quote-unquote, take care of him.
Oh.
Yes. She fought back against the encroaching mafia, attacking and destroying the storefronts of any businesses that ran Schultz betting operations. She tipped the police that he had not bought off to his operations, which led them to raid his clearinghouse, arrest 14 of his employees, and seize $2 million.
So she's not playing around.
No, she's not playing around. And she has police on her side, too, which is, I think, a big thing.
Important to note. Yeah.
So after some time, after, like, we've been in the Harlem Renaissance for a little while, you know, the Great Depression is looming, her power started to weaken. She made several futile complaints to local authorities about harassment from the New York Police Department, which she felt were aided by Schultz. But without any political influence at City Hall, her concerns were ignored. So in response, she took out several full-page ads in Harlem newspapers, some of them with her whole page was her picture, just looking fine as hell. And she used those ads to say, to accuse senior police officers of various forms of corruption.
So she's like three billboarding it.
Yes.
Do you have these pictures?
I do.
Okay,
I will
we'll look at them.
Yeah, I'll look
we'll
at them.
We'll post them somewhere.
Yeah, we'll post them. I'll put them on probably the Twitter.
The Twitter, yeah.
To start, which is, at, GWBB podcast. So.
We're going to get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. So, yeah. So her concerns were ignored. She took out these ads. Outraged by this, she was arrested by the police on several exaggerated charges.
They're like, what are you doing?
They were like, fuck you. You can't do that. We're going to put you in a jail cell and let you cool your heels. And in response, she testified to New York State's Seabury Crime Commission about the large number of kickbacks she had paid police officials to protect her operation. So she basically outed herself.
Oh, she threw herself under the bus in order to expose his side of it, too.
Yeah, to expose the corruption in the police department.
Nice.
And so, yeah, so that led to the dismissal of several police officers.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like it wouldn't be so easy to do that today, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Like, here's a corrupt police officer. Well, you know.
Who cares?
He's probably a good dude.
Yeah, he's probably just a good guy. Good guy with a gun.
Ugh. Oh, no.
I'm not going to go there.
No.
Not yet.
No.
She kept taking out full page ads, and now she was basically using them as alibis. She was saying, this is where I'm going to be at this time, so that if she got murdered at any point during those times, they would know, police would know, and they could track it. So in so doing, she couldn't be seen doing anything illegal. So she, realized, oh, yeah, she realized
all eyes were on her, mm-hmm. and she was using it for protection, but she also had to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, she couldn't do anything illegal at that point. And she had also already been she'd been tangling with the police and exposing her operations to them. So she was kind of she was at the point where she couldn't do much anymore on the, illegal crime lord side of her life.
Got it.
So she agreed to a truce with Dutch Schultz and transferred the power.
Is this guy a German mobster? But it's like, I don't know.
That's... I don't know. It's weird. She finally agreed to a truce which transferred the power and profits from her organization to Schultz and the Italian mafia. But she... Sorry, I'm going to go back just a little bit. She transferred the power and profits from her organization to Schultz and the Italian mafia, and her business partner, Bumpy Johnson, was now operating as the mafia representative in Harlem.
That sounds like he has BD.
Bumpy Johnson. I know, and I don't know what his first name was, what his real actual name was.
Weird-ass mafia nicknames. None of them sound very... complimentary.
They hadn't figured out innuendo at that point.
But not all of them are even intimidating. Anyway.
No. Bumpy Johnson.
Don't meet Bumpy in the night. That's all I can.
And apparently he was kind of a brute too. He was kind of a bruiser.
Who knows? Maybe they give the non-intimidating names to the intimidating people so you don't I'm gonna sick so and so on you and
yeah.
I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
And then that's a good idea. Oh yeah, Bumpy? Yeah, sure. Send Bumpy my way. And then he shows up and he's like, hey, I'm Bumpy. And you're like, oh shit. Never
and then
mind.
He collects. Yeah.
For the drama of it.
For the drama. The drama is the most important thing.
Yes.
Especially to Stephanie St. Clair. Obviously. Mm-hmm. Full page ad. Wonder Woman.
Yes.
It wasn't all bad, though, because in 1935, Dutch Schultz was shot dead while taking a shit on the orders of another Italian mafia guy named Lucky Luciano.
Same way as Tywin Lannister.
Shit, I ruined it. So she was not involved with the murder, but she was remembered for sending an infamous telegram to his bed as he lay dying that said, as ye sow, so ye shall reap.
Oh, so she didn't do it, but
she's like,
I do not feel bad for you.
Nope. You deserve this, you little
Whoa.
Bitch. The telegram made headlines across the nation.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah. So with Bumpy Johnson protecting her, Schultz dead, and this new desire to keep her life on the straight and narrow, she transitioned into using her public persona to advocate for political reform. This is where things kind of get a little weird, because she married this fucking weird dude named Eugene Brown initially. That was the name he was born with in Massachusetts. But then he converted to Islam and started going by Sufi Abdul Hamid. I don't really want to talk, like, too much. I have, like, a whole paragraph here about him, but I don't really want to talk too much about him except to say that he was kind of a con artist. He started cheating on her with a fortune teller. The two of them started using Stephanie St. Clair's money to start up these random businesses that, like, didn't do any, like, they all fell through.
They didn't make a show about her.
They're making I think HBO is making a movie or a miniseries about her. Somebody's making something about her. And I think that is new. That's like a recent development as of late last year.
Hell yeah. Okay, continue.
Yeah, so keep an eye out.
With the fortune teller, they're stealing her money.
Yeah, and he was like a huge anti-Semite. So they called him Black Hitler in the headline. Like, it was it was not good. It was not good. And it's bad. Like, he would target and boycott Jewish businesses
in New York
in Harlem. It was bad. So she found out about him and this fortune teller person and how they were stealing all her money, and she it's unclear. She says she shot him. He says she shot at him. Either way, she shot at him, and she got 3 years in prison for doing that.
Did she hit him?
I don't know. She says she hit him. He says that she nicked his teeth. Like,
oh, that hurts me to think about.
I know. Like, the bullet just went straight. I don't know. Like,
if you've ever chipped a tooth.
That sounds like some macho bullshit to me, but whatever.
Like, it just went ting off my teeth, and I'm fine.
Like, whatever. Whatever, dude. You tell yourself that. So, after that, her story gets a little bit hazy. Without Stephanie St. Clair looking out for it, those running the underworld of Harlem didn't quite know what to do with its money or its resources. While she was in jail. So rather than reinvesting in the community as Queenie would have done, as Stephanie St. Clair would have done, they spent the money squabbling with outside forces, presumably other gangs interested in taking over the illegal dealings in the borough.
Got it.
So once out of prison, she did not enter back into the numbers game. She lived a quiet life and then died at 73 years old in 1969.
Still in Harlem?
I don't know. Probably, maybe. Years later, when interviewed about St. Clair, the widow of Bumpy Johnson summed her up.
Aw.
I know.
He found love.
Bumpy found love. We didn't think it could happen, but it did. She summed her up as a woman not afraid to, quote-unquote, kick off her expensive high heels and go toe-to-toe with any man or woman insolent enough to insult her breeding and character. End quote. And that is the story of Stephanie St. Clair.
Shit, dude.
The amazing mobster in Harlem during the Harlem Renaissance.
I'm so excited to see if this does get turned into a TV, because it's just rife with drama.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And intrigue.
There is something, and I think...
liberties with where she comes from and how the money came. Like, you can do whatever you want. Yeah. Like, you can fictionalize that.
Yeah. I think as I was researching this, I found something about... I think it was a movie that was done, like, a while, like, maybe 15, 20 years ago, that I think Angela Bassett is in.
So
I'm gonna have to look that up.
Angela
more
Bassett
in depth.
Hasn't aged a damn day, so she could do it
it's
again.
It's ridiculous. Like, she looks exactly the same.
It's stupid.
It's upsetting.
That woman is gorgeous. No, and will be gorgeous.
That's its own podcast.
She's 180 years old. and just looks like she's 25.
She's probably just bathing in the blood of virgins.
Yep.
Anyway.
What?
That's it.
Thanks, Han.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
I know.
And now I know. I had no idea who she was. I never heard of her.
I know. Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, yo, Hannah.
Yes.
This is our first episode. And... we want to sign off with something that's exciting. We want to sign off with something that we're into, something that is getting our gears going in a good way.
Yep. Yep.
So let me know what's up.
So as a literary person, I, of course, have a book to talk about.
Yeah.
It is called Blood, Water, Paint. It's by Joy McCulloch. And this book is fucking incredible. It's technically a young adult novel, but you don't need to be a young adult to read it. It's told in verse, and it is about a real life painter from God, I don't even fucking know, long, long ass time ago. Oh, Rome in 1610. And she was a painter who painted, and her father took credit for her work. But she was one of...
What?
Yes. She was one of the most brilliant painters of her time. And it's her story, and it's just
like
really...
Like a fictionalized account of...
Like a fictionalized account, but very, very well researched, and it's told in, like...
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's prose. It's prose poetry. Sorry, it's verse. It's told in verse. So it's really amazing, and it comes out March 6th, I think, this year. Yeah, so pick up a copy when that comes out, because it's another, I would say she's a good witch. So
that sounds about right.
Yeah, she's a good witch, and you should go read about her.
Fabulous.
Yeah, and then otherwise, we want to start doing this thing whenever we get enough readers to actually, or listeners to actually make this happen. I know I keep saying viewers,
listeners.
Whenever we get enough listeners to actually do this, we want to start profiling your good witches and your bad bitches, people
that
in
you
your
know
life,
of, your
family members,
your friends,
your moms, your grandmoms.
Lay it all on us.
Yes.
We are about it.
Yes. So to do that,
Email us.
Email us your stories. Our email is gwbbpodcast@gmail.com.
Boom, boom.
Yeah. And we also have a Twitter that we're going to start posting some of, like, the various ancillary content we've been talking about throughout our stories.
Photos of these women.
Photos, videos, all that stuff. So that is, you can find us at gwbbpodcast on Twitter. So check us out there. And otherwise... that's it.
Yeah.
I think that's it. And we're just gonna sign off.
That's Hannah.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Deanna.
She's Deanna.
We have the same in the name game. It goes the same way. Banana-fana-fo-fana.
Oh my God.
I'm not wrong.
You're not wrong. But we need to stop rhyming.
Okay.
So.
Have a good one, everybody. Thank you for listening.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.